morning, I might take that promotion. My name is Kelly Sheeran, and I represent the city of Chesapeake in Chesapeake, Virginia. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal at this time. It wasn't very long ago that Your Honors heard the case of Ramsey versus City of Virginia Beach, also an eminent domain appeal. And in that appeal, and during the argument of that case, I believe it was either Justice Goodwin or Justice Kelsey that stated that it has always been the policy of our Commonwealth to, since the beginning, that justice should prevail, and any evidence that would promote the search of the truth, if it's relevant, should be admissible. And that is why the City of Chesapeake is here today on this appeal to ask the court to reverse and remand the trial court's finding of residue damages on the Dominion parcel by virtue of its rewriting.
May I interrupt you for a moment?
Yes, sir.
The original access road.
Yes, sir.
I couldn't find anything in this record to specifically identify whether or not the take or the petition for condemnation had anything whatsoever to do with that. In other words, the description of the take and did not include the original access road, which appears to be forfeited upon a condition of the conditional use permit. So,
let me see if I can illustrate for you in my answer the situation, Your Honor. The before access road was Dominion Boulevard, a two-lane highway, and not a divided highway.
Right.
In the after situation, the access road that's being provided to Dominion is at grade, and it's basically part of the same road that Dominion originally wanted.
Right.
What is occurring is the new Dominion Boulevard, which is also called Veterans Highway, has been raised higher than the original road. But right. Interestingly enough,
but specifically my question is the access, the original access road, that easement, if it was an easement, and it's unclear that it even was a technical easement, was never taken by...
Oh, correct. Your question relative to the appellee's brief.
So if you need a hook for the project rule, that can't be the hook because there was nothing taken there.
You're quite correct, and that is just a red herring, Your Honor, with all due respect to Dominion. There was no easement appurtenant that was ever conveyed from the city to Dominion for access easements in this city's right-of-way. It's nothing more than the public's ability to use the city right-of-way. And no easement for visibility was ever conveyed to Dominion. So no.
Am I also right, the conditional use permit issued to the Ewers in preparation for this development said in condition 4 that the existing entrance would be closed?
Yes, sir. Our planning commission held a hearing because the engineers and permits and development notified Dominion's engineer that in order to get site plan approval, they needed a variance to the subdivision plat ordinance because they did not have enough road frontage. And they also needed a right-of-way reservation as well.
So the bottom line is every bit of the ramp up to the bridge is on city-owned property, and
yes,
none of it was subject to the take.
Yes, sir. That's correct. That is correct. And that is our issue relative to the visibility issue. While we maintain the position that no damages should be recoverable because of the waiver of damages clause in the right-of-way reservation agreement that was freely and voluntarily accepted by Dominion, you are correct.
But Note 7 takes away a damage claim that would be legally viable, but if there's no legally viable damage claim to begin with, you don't have to worry about contractually waiving it.
Agreed, yes, sir. Yes, sir. So we have asked for the reversal of the court's award of damages, not only based on the rewriting of the reservation agreement and the waiver of damages clause and the way in which it was construed by the trial court, But we also seek the reversal of the damages award based on the fact that the judge did not enforce the conditional variance.
May I ask a question, counsel, about the... A lot of the argument that you make depends on what Dominion knew and when they knew it. And I have two questions, one with regard to your assignment of error and one with regard to a procedural issue that I can't find any law on. Your assignment of error on your motion to reconsider indicates that the court erred in refusing to grant a hearing.
Yes, ma'am.
Your argument underlying that assignment of error basically is that the court erred in denying the motion to reconsider.
Yes, ma'am.
But is that issue before us because of the nature of your assignment of error?
I believe it is, Your Honor. Not only did we move for the motion to reconsider and the motion for the court to grant a hearing to reconsider, but when the court denied it, we made an exception on the record in the form of our order that we accepted the court. We noted our exception to the court's ruling. Have I answered your question?
You haven't, because your assignment of error just assigns error to the court's failure to grant the hearing.
Yes, ma'am, and I believe that we do have in the record that we noted our exception to its failure to grant the hearing. And we had a mini-hearing on the hearing.
Right.
On motion.
I understand that. But if the assignment of error is the trial court erred in failing to grant the hearing as to whether we should have a motion to reconsider, as opposed to the trial court erred in failing to grant our motion to reconsider, are they two different things, one of which you have not assigned error to?
I don't believe so. I believe that they are one and the same. And I will point out that Judge, the trial court was incredibly patient and perseverant in making sure that we were preserving all errors, and there was a continuing motion that he, in the record, that he made on behalf of the city, which was most generous. So,
my other question is, most of the evidence as to what Dominion knew about the rise of the bridge and the denial of the access would have been contained in the evidence that you presented on your motion to reconsider.
It would have been.
Because the court denied your motion to reconsider, is that evidence, was that evidence before the trial court, and is it before us?
Yes, ma'am. Fortunately, Judge Smith allowed us to call Mr. Rob Callum, the engineer for Dominion, who was Dominion's agent, who acted on behalf of Dominion, and there is a great deal of testimony at trial by Mr. Kellum relative to the conditional variance process, as well as the Planning Commission's findings, and then his collaboration and discussions face-to-face with Mr. Fiskus.
And that's the evidence the trial court struck on Dominion's motion?
At the end of the trial, yes, ma'am.
What I'm concerned that this whole issue of what Dominion knew and when did it know it is just a big, huge red herring. What difference does it make in a condemnation case? I know, what difference does it make?
Well, this court in Cy Gray stated that even if a city or a county extracts something from a landowner or a developer for site plan approval that doesn't have the authority to do, it could be unconstitutional. That if that developer voluntarily accepts that in return for site plan approval, which is this case, then that is an established enforceable contract. So it doesn't matter if the Planning Commission didn't have authority to ask for...
But the question is not that. Of course the contract can... Of course parties can agree to do whatever they want to agree. The question is, how do you interpret Note 7? And Justice Rouse's question is, does it really matter? Foreseeability. I mean, this is not a Hadley versus Baxendale. It's not consequential damages. It's just Note 7, residue damages caused by the reserved area. Oh, wait, period. Why would it matter whether a contractual party could extrapolate where that would eventually lead with new circumstances in the future. They agreed to what they agreed to.
I agree with that, and that is, I would hope that is what I try to express in the appellant's brief.
But if that's true, then your point about the rehearing doesn't matter. So what that you didn't get evidence in that they actually knew and everyone in Hampton Roads knew there was a big bridge coming? It doesn't matter. They agreed to waive under note 7 all the residual damages.
Yes, and our issue with the judge enforcing or inserting an additional term of foreseeability, we disagree with. We believe that the plain meaning of Note 7 is all damages to the residue. If they wanted to specify certain damages that were foreseeable, then they should have put those words in there.
I'm concerned that what you put forth in your brief as the relevancy of the foreseeability issue isn't really what you said at trial. At trial, you said that the testimony was relevant to what a willing purchaser would have offered for the property. And I just don't see how in a take in 2012, was it, what the relevance is of what a purchaser would have paid for the property 11 years earlier.
Well, because, Your Honor, this is a willing buyer who is a developer of a storage facility who knows, who has actual knowledge of the conditions that have been placed upon him. He knows what the future concessions are going to be, such as loss of direct access, a substituted access road, a 95-foot bridge that would obstruct the visibility, and the fact that there is a right-of-way reservation that he has agreed to put on their plat for waiving damages in the future by virtue of the future road improvement. So that is the classic example of what a willing buyer was willing to pay for that property with all of those disadvantages, if you will.
10 years earlier, though.
Years earlier, but it
but that's not the issue in a condemnation. It's as of the day of the take.
That may be true, and I don't like the term foreknowledge. I believe, irrelevant. What's more important is that you have a developer who has made voluntary concessions, and he has made a contract with the city. It doesn't have to be written. It doesn't have to be in the chain of title. And we have evidence in the record through Mr. Kellum, his principal, his engineer, that all of those conditions were accepted. And I believe that that is overwhelming evidence that precluded the recovery of damages, all damages in this case.
Thank you. With the exception of the additional take.
And then the city has never, ever put forward the position that they should not be able to claim damages for those portions of the easements that are outside of the reserve area.
But obviously no bridge was built on that, so the loss of access and the visibility of residue damages are irrelevant to that claim.
That is our argument, Your Honor, that because our Constitution, both in effect during the date of take, which is 2012, and our amended Constitution, as well as 25.1-230, both of those require that damages flow directly from the take or the use of the take. And the adoption by this trial court of the Utah Minority Project Rule to establish that there is compensability in Virginia for loss of visibility where there's been nothing done in the take or the use of the take that created this obstruction is another reason why the city has appealed and asked the court reverse and remand on that issue as well. Although I believe that the right-of-way reservation agreement nullified the claim to any damages. Should this court disagree with that, I've asked the court to consider reversing the trial court's unilateral adoption of a minority rule from Utah that does not represent or comport with our laws, our precedent, or even our policy.
So So if we remand, what you think is left of this case is a determination of damages for what was not part of the reservation.
Yes, ma'am.
Which is just the temporary construction easement, the utility easement, and the water line?
A portion of the water line easement. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and that's all you think should be left of this case. Is that right?
That is what we believe. It sounds harsh. I realize that. But I believe that when individuals with knowledge and experience contract and they get what they want, they should, their word is their bond.
Was there any evidence at trial that the public utility easement, the variable width proposed temporary construction easement, or the variable width city waterline easement caused any residual damages to the
residents? No, sir, not that I could find.
Well, why would we remand it for anything? They had the burden of proving that, and they didn't put the evidence on.
I guess I was being generous and asking for a remand.
Well, applaud your generosity, but go ahead.
I see that I have 4 minutes left. If there are no other questions, I'll be happy to turn it over to Mr. Barr and then come back for my rebuttal.
All right. You have 3 minutes and 51 seconds.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, I'm Stanley Barr, and I'm here appearing on behalf of Dominion Security, the appellee in this case. And I want to preface my comments with the statement that this is a condemnation action. This is not a contract action. And the city has taken inconsistent positions with regard to whether it is a contract action under the right-of-way reservation or whether or not it's a contract action. So,
Mr. Barr, may I ask you this, Mr. Barr?
Yes, sir.
The petition for condemnation, the take itself,
yes.
Did any of the description of the scope of the take involve anything related to the original access road?
It did not.
And was the original access road ever recorded at any time as a recorded easement?
There was not a recorded easement.
So there was no property right there. The landowner had no recorded property right, and whatever the property right that was there was not taken anyway.
Well, clearly there was a property right. As I pointed out in our brief, if you look at the site plan, which is included as part of the record, I can't remember whether it's referred to as a right-of-way for access or an easement for access. I don't recall the specific language used.
Right-of-way.
But with right-of-way. Without regard to whether it was a right-of-way or an easement, it is still an impertinent right. It is a property right. And consistent with the protection of property rights under our Constitution, that right, once taken, is entitled to just compensation. Now, did the city not include that in the certificate of take because the Commonwealth Transportation Board in 2009 had already declared Dominion Boulevard a public access highway? That's unclear. But what is clear is that if they had included that access for easement or for right-of-way to Dominion Boulevard in the certificate of take, they could not have claimed that it was necessary and consistent with the language of the right-of-way reservation, because that was sufficiently outside the right-of-way reservation.
Right, but there's like
secondly, and I may be giving the city too much credit, if they had acknowledged that the city had a right-of-way or an easement over the city's right-of-way, they could not then claim, as they're doing, under 25.2-230, that no part of the bridge is built on any property or any property right of Dominion, that in fact it was all built on city property. Now, as I said, I may be giving the city too much credit for being that clever, but nonetheless, it is obvious that had that language been included in the certificate of take, they could not have, clearly could not have claimed any rights under the reservation. Of course, I'm taking the position that they had no right to claim under the right-of-way reservation anyway, because they've taken more land for purposes of the easements than was contemplated in the right-of-way reservation.
May I interrupt you one more time? But you use if. Correct me if I'm wrong. This petition for condemnation does not describe any property related to the access road. It's not there.
You are absolutely correct.
Okay, so if they could have, whatever, it's not there. So why does it keep factoring into your argument? I'm not understanding.
Because there was a taking in fact.
Well, maybe you should have filed a claim of inverse condemnation.
And perhaps I should have. And it is relevant to whether or not the city even had, I guess, the right, because the Commonwealth Transportation Commission had acted in 2009. But nonetheless, the city acknowledged that the right of Dominion to have access to Dominion Boulevard. And unlike the Lindsley case, as an example, where the commissioner specifically sought determination of value of the easement to, coincidentally, Route 17, just like Dominion Boulevard, but there was no specific award of damages for that easement. It was presumed to be included in the value of the take.
Can I interrupt you for a moment? This access easement you're talking about, which you say was taken, and that's a pertinent right that gets you into the argument that you get your damages for loss of visibility because it was necessary to take part of your property for the bridge. I don't know how you have this right if you're just talking about from a public, it's already a public roadway. Are you talking about a curb cut?
I'm sorry.
Are you talking about a curb cut? What is it that was your right that was taken?
Clearly it was more than a curb cut, and I recognize that the city is referring to it as a curb cut. But nonetheless, it was a driveway of approximately 150 feet.
So you're talking about the driveway from the actual pavement of the existing Dominion Boulevard
back
to your store.
Yes, that's
back
correct.
Back to your location.
And that driveway was included specifically in the site plan and built according to city specifications, for which Dominion had to post a performance bond. Now, the posting of a performance bond is in and of itself a recognition that Dominion had a property right for access. And so whether or not that property right was included in the certificate of take is coincidental, or perhaps not relevant, recognizing that it was a taking in fact. So if we recognize that, and it's interesting, in the city's brief and throughout the trial of the case, the city took the position that the loss of direct access was a condition that was imposed by the Planning Commission when it granted the variance. It was not until we got the reply brief that the city is saying, no, the loss of access occurred when the right-of-way reservation was exercised and the certificate of take was filed. Well, I think that begs the question whether or not the property owner has any remaining rights with regard to a claim of damage or claim of access or claim of visibility with regard to the additional rights taken outside the reservation. So not only do we have the taking of the easements as a part of the certificate of take, but we also have the easement or the right-of-way for access for that roughly 100 feet west of the 50 feet that was taken as a result of the certificate of take.
Mr. Barr, in 2001, the Planning Commission agenda minute says the approval is conditioned on the owner of the property providing connection to the service road when constructed, future access road, and closing the existing entrance on Dominion Boulevard as required by the Department of Public Works. So doesn't that contemplate that the landowner is agreeing to give up their driveway immediately to the Old Dominion Boulevard when a access road is presented by the city otherwise to the property later?
No, I don't think so. And if you're referring to that that memorandum from Mr. Sawan to Mr. Milanazzo, Judge Smith would not allow the admission of that document. In the first place, there was no specific communication from Sawan to Mr. Keller. Secondly, that was before Dominion became active in attempting to purchase this property.
Actually, I was reading from the Planning Commission agenda minutes.
The action of the Planning Commission?
Agenda minutes.
And again, Your Honor, when the Planning Commission agenda was presented as a part of the city's case, it was a proffer. Judge Smith allowed all of that evidence to come in, which I think deals specifically with the question of the motion to reconsider. Judge Smith recognized that though there was some knowledge that that specific provision, whether or not it was a condition, as the city has repeatedly argued up until this point, whether or not it was a condition, Judge Smith recognized that it was not a condition that was impacted by the development of the property. And that was the City Code Section 70-38, I believe, which Ms. Sheeran offered to Judge Smith at the time that we were before the court in October of 2014. So if the fact that there was information conveyed to the developer that there may be a closing of the road or that they may be a bridge 95 feet high, that information was nowhere near being realized in 2000 or 2001. It was still in 2004. They were still debating the kind of bridge, whether or not it was going to be a drawbridge at grade or whether or not it was going to be an elevated bridge. And to the extent that it was going to be a drawbridge at grade, whether or not it was going to be a limited access highway. So the fact that there was information was very much up in the air. It was clear that the city had no funding for this project, and that funding didn't come until much later. And it's interesting,
Council,
that in the...
Council.
Judge Reyes.
Thank you. You've mentioned the visibility issue. And
yes.
I'd like to move on to that, if we could. As I was reading this case, it occurred to me, you know, this is similar to something I've read before, and then I realized what it was. It was another Dominion case, but it was a much larger Dominion, Dominion Virginia Power. In Fauquier County, it was the Viewshed case that we decided.
I'm sorry, the which case?
The Viewshed case,
yes,
that we decided a few years ago. And this really is an inverse Viewshed claim. Viewshed claim is you've done something off of my property which disturbs my ability to look outward. And this is you've done something off of my property which disturbs the ability of people who are outside to look inward at my business. And we didn't smile very broadly upon that Viewshed claim. And so I started to think through what are the ramifications, where's the bottom of the slippery slope if you prevail on this claim.
I've
got three examples that,
yeah,
I want to set before you, and I want you to tell me how you would distinguish them. The first is in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, Route 7, west of Route 123 out to the Dulles Toll Road. There is some of the most expensive retail property in the entire Commonwealth that had a beautiful at-grade view from both directions until Metro put an elevated train track there, which was quite controversial, and which has really harmed the visibility of those retail businesses. The second one would be on Interstate 95, where the HOV lanes have been extended and causing where there are access or ingress points, causing a take, and where that has extended the footprint significantly. And some very high sound walls had to be created, had to be put in place under federal law. I can think of at least one that has destroyed all visibility from the interstate at an exit to a very large shopping center that's immediately adjacent to it. And then finally, the beautification projects throughout the state where large trees and shrubs are put on next to highways and definitely destroy the visibility you would have if there's no foliage whatsoever. Respond to those three situations. How are you distinct from those?
Justice Mims, as I recall those cases, and the Pike 7 case I have a specific recollection of, I don't recall that there was anything in those cases which spoke in terms of the property being taken being an indispensable or inseparable part of the project. And throughout this case, including in the petition that is for condemnation, the city has maintained from the very beginning that the property taken was essential, necessary for this project. The city used the term project. It didn't originate with Dominion. But Dominion has taken advantage of the fact that the city has acknowledged that the property taken was an indispensable part of the project. Even the city's appraiser, Mr. Armstrong, for all of his odd opinions, even acknowledged that the property taken was a part of the project. So to the extent that that is an indispensable part of the project, unlike the cases that you've mentioned,
one of them I would suggest easily could have been an indispensable part, and that is the sound walls, where in order to leave the HOV lanes at any particular exit, they had to do a take outside of the existing footprint of the highway, or it would appear that there was a take outside of the existing footprint. When that was done, sound walls were put up, because federal law now requires that at various points on a project of that nature. And I would suggest that, although I'm not familiar with the facts, that it would appear that it could have been an indispensable part, because otherwise you couldn't leave the HOV lanes to get off at that particular exit.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. But the question is whether or not that was evidence in the case, whether or not VDOT took the position in the petition that it was an indispensable part of the project. In the first motion in limine that the city filed, it made it clear to the court that this property taken was a necessary portion of the project.
Okay, so let's say that it was.
Yes.
I don't have the facts to dispute that. Let's say that it was an indispensable part. What is the other than Galax versus Waugh from 1925, which has been responded to by Chesapeake, what's the authority for saying, okay, it's indispensable, therefore we have essentially a viewshed claim that we're allowed to make?
Well, as I recall, viewshed was a view case and not a visibility case, but that may be splitting hairs.
Okay. What's the authority for a visibility claim?
Yes. I think that your concern is justified. And to the extent that there is concern that this is going to be opening up other issues, I take issue with the city's interpretation of 25.1-230, that if the cause of the loss of visibility is not built on the property taken, then the property owner has no claim. There's been no interpretation of that code section, and my position is that it is entirely inconsistent with Article 1, Section 11 of the Constitution, as well as 1.219.1 of the code. And it's interesting that throughout this case, whether it's for the project or not, the city has taken the position that although this is a contract case, it throughout it's taken the position that it's a condemnation case. If you look at the petition, where it asks that a jury or judge be impaneled to determine just compensation under 25.2-230, limited by the reservation clause. There's no separation of what's within and what's out. And I take the position that where the city acknowledges that property outside the reservation means that the property owner can claim damage. Now, to your point, the claim of damage for loss of visibility, and where does this take us? To the extent that there is any element that impacts market value, it should be considered. And that's our position. And that's the position that was in town of Galax versus Wall. And certainly that was the premise in the Admiral Beveridge case from Utah. Now, is that precedent in Virginia? There is no precedent in Virginia, just like there is no interpretation of 25.1-230. But clearly, and I'm no real estate mogul, but I understand well that property is more valuable where there is direct access and visibility. And you take away one, and it has less value. Every case that has been decided in this court having to do with damage to the residue, where there has been an issue with regard to loss of visibility, a loss of value, the court has recognized retail, the market value is a determining factor in the determination of damages. And we take the position that there has been damage by virtue of loss of visibility, and the fact that more property is taken than was included in the reservation gives us the right to claim damage. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Scherer?
Thank you, Justice. I'd like to first comment on the fact that I believe it was Judge Kelsey raised the issue of the appurtenant access easement, access road, if you will, and that was not mentioned in the certificate of take. The city's response to that is this reply brief of the appellees raised that for the first time. There is nothing in the record. There is no evidence that was presented at trial or in any of the motions that Dominion owned or had been conveyed an appurtenant easement of access for the access road. I'd also like to point out that what is in the record in the plat and plan sheet number 12, you will find that their curb cut driveway where this supposed appurtenant easement of access is within the 50-foot right-of-way reservation. But most importantly, this court should not take up that issue since it is now being heard for the first time by Dominion. And may I just say that a performance bond is just for the purpose of ensuring that the contractor does the work appropriately, and it has nothing to do with transferring any kind of vested right in the city's right-of-way. I would also add that if the court does take up that issue, because it was not in the certificate of take, Justice Kelsey is quite correct, they would have had to file an inverse condemnation, and that would have been their remedy if we had acquired something that was not described in the certificate of take. And then briefly, I'd like to touch on the fact that it doesn't matter that the Planning Commission did or did not have the authority, because just like in Cy Gray, the county didn't have the authority to ask Cy Gray to build a road. They volunteered. And why did they do it? For site plan approval. And that's what this case is. It's almost a mirror image of the Cy Gray case. And yes, you may raise contractual defenses in an eminent domain case. It happens every day. Your mortgage probably has an eminent domain clause in it. If you lease property to one of your renters, there's probably an eminent domain clause in it. Every day, people waive their property rights. They have the right to do that. The city did not take away Dominion's property rights. They voluntarily gave those rights away. Mr. Barr mentioned, or one of the justices mentioned, the Galax case. And Mr. Barr mentioned that it's his opinion that any time a property loses market value, that that is an issue that is that should be raised and it should be compensable. Well, that's not what this court said in Byler. It's not what this court said even earlier in Lambert and Peters. An economic reason is not the only reason. An economic diminution in value for something that's happened on somebody else's land to your land does not give you, ipso facto, the right to bring an inverse and to be compensated. There has to be a dislocation of some specific right.
All right, thank you very much. Your time has expired. Call the next case.